While Italy's foreign minister Antonio Tajani has urged Israel to use the four-day ceasefire in Gaza to carefully consider what the international perception is of its offensive against the Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
Marching towards Al-Quds, as they called it, over 5,000 members of Iran's Basij volunteer forces took to the streets downtown Tehran in one of the largest gatherings held in the Iranian capital to express their outrage at the ongoing Israeli bloodshed in Gaza and the deliberate targeting of children. Carrying the Palestinian flag, they chanted slogans against the occupying Israeli regime and its Western backers, the U.S. in particular, as they condemned the genocide in the besieged territory.
The Basij force is actually Iran's ordinary people, the ones who pray in mosques. So what you see here is the huge support of Iranians for men, women and children in Gaza.
My message to the kids in Gaza is that we will always support them.
More than 14,000 innocent Muslims have been killed so far. According to the statistics, nearly 7,000 of those who have been killed are children. As a member of the Basij volunteer force, I just had to take part in this rally. The oppressed people in Gaza should know that they are not alone.
Many demonstrators also carried bundled white shrouds symbolizing the children killed in Gaza in the Israeli attacks on schools and hospitals.
Everywhere in the world, people agree, and also according to international law, attacking hospitals is a war crime. As a member of the Basij force in the Faculty of Medicine, I'm here to condemn the war crimes committed by the Israeli regime.
Whenever in a war you see one side taking unconventional measures, it's a clear sign that they are desperate. Attacking women and children and killing children shows how weak the Israelis are. The people of Palestine should know that their victory is near.
We will always support the suppressed people of Palestine. All the people that you see here have come to condemn the Israeli regime. We will defend them till our last drop of blood.
The government's media office in Gaza announced on Thursday that at least 14,800 people have been killed in the Israeli attacks so far, including nearly 7,000 children, while over 36,000 have also been injured. 60% of the homes in Gaza have also been destroyed.
Since the beginning of the Israeli war on Gaza, not a day has gone by that Iranians have come out on the streets to show their support for the Palestinian people. More than 10 million people have so far signed up to go to Gaza. Hizumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
In a heartwarming display of empathy and solidarity, thousands of school children from private and public schools across Pakistan gathered at a spirited children's rally to express their support for the Palestinian children facing the harsh realities of Israel's atrocities in Gaza. The event, marked by a sea of youthful faces, echoed with chants of unity and calls for justice.
We are here to tell our Palestinian sisters and brothers that they are not alone. We are always stand with them and we always raise our voice for them.
I'm here to support Palestine and support kids like me. My message is that the Palestinians shall be free.
Pakistani children, armed with compassion, stood united to condemn the injustices that Palestinian children face amid the ongoing war in Gaza.
We are here to show our support to the children of Palestine. We stand with them.
I am here to support the Palestinian children and I stand with them.
The rally served as a testament to the power of education in fostering compassion and empathy, transcending geographical boundaries to create a global community that stands against oppression.
Any conflict in which such a big number of children are killed, this is a children's genocide in Gaza, and children around the world are showing solidarity with the children of Gaza they are angry about the killing because Israel has targeted the children of Gaza specifically.
Children here in Pakistan called for a world in which each and every child's rights are safeguarded and respected.
Through their participation in these pro-Palestine rallies, Pakistani school children not only supported the solidarity narrative, but also reminded the international community of profound resonance of Israel's onslaught on Gaza within the younger generation, which values justice, empathy, and peace. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
On Wednesday, Palestinians living through the ongoing Israeli brutal assault in the Gaza Strip met with the head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, on the sidelines of a general audience held in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican. The Palestinian delegation was composed of 10 people with relatives in Gaza and in the West Bank and included Muslims and Christians. Pope Francis turned his thoughts to those suffering in the conflict, describing what is happening in the Holy Land as, quote, terrorism, not war. After meeting with the pontiff, family members of Palestinians living in Gaza held a press conference in the Paul VI hall, during which they spoke out the pain.
200 complete families have been wiped out from the civil register. This is with the threaten of lack of water, lack of food, lack of security, etc. This has one meaning. These people are asked to move out from their places using power. This is genocide.
Before, we used to talk about, you know, hopes and recognition of a state and all these things that we really hope for. But at this point, I mean, what's happening in Gaza is a catastrophe. And the catastrophe, we are even worried what's going to happen later on after war is finished. And when it stops, the first thing we want to think of, you know, 1,300,000 are displaced with no homes.
Since the start of the aggression, Tel Aviv has killed over 14,500 Palestinians, including nearly 6,000 children and almost 4,000 women, injuring at least 33,000 others, according to the Hamas-run health ministry in the Gaza Strip. Over the past weeks, the Italian government, as well as opposition lawmakers, have been voicing support for placing a United Nations peacekeeping force in the Gaza Strip in an alleged attempt to ensure stability in the region. However, many believe this measure alone would only result in an umpteenth temporary patchy solution to the conflict.
If we, at the end, in cooperation with the international community, if the leadership would accept the international protection, it would be part of an overall plan with a clear roadmap, with an end game to end the Israeli aggression and occupation and to reach to our dignity, our statehood, as exactly the world promised us.
International organizations have also called for states that are party to the Geneva Conventions to fulfill their obligations to ensure respect for the Fourth Geneva Convention by acting collectively to prevent further violations, particularly in the Gaza Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
He should have been in Gaza saving lives, but the occupying regime has imposed a 10-year ban preventing him from entering the Strip. Dr. Mads Gilbert, the world-renowned Norwegian anesthesiologist, is bent on doing his best to help the Palestinians. So he's now trying to raise public awareness of the plight of the Palestinian people and the heroic efforts by medics to save lives there.
The Palestinian healthcare workers, they are the heroes. They are the heroes.
Dr. Gilbert has worked in Palestine and Lebanon for over 40 years. Having witnessed the attacks Israel carries out, he notes Israel deliberately attacks children in the Strip.
But this is what man-made injury and man-made pain and man-made evil looks like. When you shoot off the legs of a whole young population, you shoot off the arms, you do it for one reason, not to defend yourself, but to tell the occupied, this is what's going to happen to you if you pick up anything to try to confront us. A stone, a tire, a gun, whatever, we will do this to you.
The assault on the medical facilities is therefore very much part of the sinister plot to eliminate Palestinian resistance.
The level of medicine that is practiced in Gaza, it's superb. It's at and above the level that I have in my university hospital. But they have been strangulated for 16 years of siege. They have been denied supplies, spare parts, new instruments, trolleys, just to repair what they have because of the siege. Because the occupier, they do not want the Palestinians to have anything close to.
Joining doctors and medical workers here, Dr. Gilbert noted that Israel's war crimes on hospitals will continue, especially because of the impunity under which it acts with the full cover of the West. Outside the world-famous Red Cross Children's Hospital here, Dr. Gilbert handed out roses in memory of Palestinian children massacred by Israel. While he's barred by the Zionist regime from saving lives in Gaza, he's trying to spread the message of resistance thousands of kilometers away at the tip of Africa. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said his country will not allow the issue of Israel's nuclear weapons to be dropped from the global agenda, saying the European countries' support to Israel is due to what he called the shame of the Holocaust. On the U.S. support of the regime, the Turkish president said that we are not surprised by the backing provided to Israel's lies by those who occupied Iraq on the pretext of nuclear and chemical weapons.
Israel openly admits and confesses to having nuclear weapons, but neither the United Nations Security Council nor the International Atomic Energy Agency launches an investigation. The nuclear weapons issue is not an ordinary issue on which one can just remain silent. Those who don't speak out against Israel today cannot criticize other countries in the future.
Earlier this week, Erdogan had said Israel must be tried at the ICC, vowing to use all available means to ensure that impartial punishment is delivered to the regime's crimes. Many accuse Erdogan of always condemning Israeli atrocities and giving warnings without taking any concrete actions against Tel Aviv. Turkey has not yet cancelled its gas deal with Israel and also hasn't closed its embassy in Tel Aviv. The majority of Turkish people want their government to fully cut ties with Israel. The nation criticizes Erdogan for threatening and condemning, while in reality he maintains good political and economic relations with Israel. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
The ceremony has been held at the representative office of Hamas movement in Tehran to commemorate Ahmed Berh, the vice speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council and a member of the Hamas movement, who was martyred during Israeli attacks in the Gaza Strip. The ceremony was attended by Hamas representative in Tehran, Khaled Qadoumi. A number of Iranian military and state officials, including members of the Iranian parliament, were also present at the ceremony.
The martyr, Sayyid Ahmed Bahar, he's an iconic struggling figure in Palestine, and he is a statue at the level of the importance of Palestinian issue. He was one of the brothers and fellows of Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder of the Hamas movement, and he used to be a straightforward, a state man, and he is a transparent fellow when he is to address the Palestinian issue. He used always to address it in a very solid, bold and straightforward fellow.
Martyr Ahmed Bahr was a great personality who stood against the Israeli aggressions until his last moment of life and did not flee his homeland. What Israel has done in the occupied lands has proved to the world that it is an aggressive regime which is just killing children and women in order to protect itself. But we warn Israel that we will sue the case at international courts and will bring the main perpetrators to justice. With all these ongoing Israeli atrocities, Israel will definitely be the main loser of the war and will collapse.
Since October 7th, Israel has bombed much of Gaza to rubble, ordered the depopulation of the entire northern half of the strip, and made around two-thirds of Gazans homeless. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said Israeli attacks had destroyed or damaged at least 45% of Gaza's housing units.
The resistance of Palestinians, especially resistance forces against the Israeli occupying regime, was a big slap in the face of the Zionist regime. The brutalities of the Israeli forces show that they have no other option but to kill children and women because they cannot stand against resistance forces. This is the beginning of the collapse of the Zionist regime, and because of its atrocities in the Gaza Strip, this regime has been hated and detested by world people more than ever before.
International officials say a humanitarian crisis for the 2.3 million residents of Gaza is entering a new, more dire phase as the Israeli war continues.
Palestinian Resistance Front says despite all Israeli atrocities in the occupied lands, resistance will continue until the full liberation of Palestine from the clutches of the Israeli regime. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
In the limelight.
Relatively few Americans say they're very or extremely confident that they could pay an unexpected medical bill, 26%, or have enough money for retirement, 18%. Only about one-third of the American public are very confident that their current financial situation will allow them to keep up with their expenses. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Chicago Tribune has covered this story and tells us more. According to a new opinion poll from the Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, about two in three Americans say their household expenses have risen over the last year, but only about one in four say their income has increased in the same period. As household expenses outpace earnings, many are expressing concern about their financial futures. What's more, for most Americans, household debt has either risen in the last year or has not gone away. Steve Shapiro, a 61-year-old who works as an audio engineer in Pittsburgh, said he's been spending about $100 a week on groceries prior to this past year, but that he's now shelling out closer to $200. He said, "My income has stayed the same. The economy is good on paper, but I'm not doing great." About 8 in 10 Americans, or 80%, say their overall household debt is higher or about the same as it was a year ago. About half say they currently have credit card debt, 4 in 10 are dealing with auto loans, and about 1 in 4 have medical debt. Just 15% of the American public say their household savings have increased over the last year. Tracy Gonzalez, a 36-year-old who works as a subcontractor in construction in San Antonio, Texas, has several thousand dollars of medical debt from an emergency room visit for what she thought was a bad headache, but turned out to be a tooth infection. She said, "They'll treat you, but the bills are crazy." Gonzalez said she's tried to avoid seeking medical treatment because of the costs. Relatively few Americans say they're very or extremely confident that they could pay for an unexpected medical bill, 26%, or have enough money for their retirement, 18%. Only about one-third of the American public are very confident that their current financial situation will allow them to keep up with their expenses. Steve Shapiro of Pittsburgh said, "I've been looking forward to retirement my entire life. Recently I realized it's just not going to happen." He added that his wife's $30,000 or so of student debt is a financial factor for his household. The couple had hoped to sell their home and move this past year, but decided instead to hold on to their mortgage rate of 3.4% rather than face a higher rate. The Associated Press has also covered the same story and tells us more. About 3 in 10 Americans say they've foregone a major purchase because of higher interest rates in the last year. Nearly 1 in 4 U.S. adults have student debt and U.S. credit card debt and other major types of revolving loans surpassed $1 trillion in August. Will Klaus, a 77-year-old from Westlake, Ohio, said inflation is his biggest concern, as he lives on a fixed income in his retirement. He said, a box of movie candy that used to cost 99 cents is now $1.50 at the grocery store. That's a 50% increase in price. Somebody's taking advantage of somebody. Americans are generally split on whether the Republicans, 29%, or the Democrats, 25%, are better suited to handle the issue of inflation. 3 in 10, or nearly 30%, say they trust neither party to address inflation. Jerry Putnam, 85 years old, of Thomson, Georgia, said she's been following the ongoing auto workers strike with sympathy for the workers. She said, I don't think it's out of line what they're asking for when you see what chief executive officers are making. She added, I think things have gotten out of control when you can walk into a store and see the next day across the board a dollar increase. That's a little strange. I understand supply and demand, the cost of shipping, etc., but it seems to me everyone's looking at their bottom lines. Jerry Putnam also said she sees her 6 children struggling financially more than her generation did. She said, they all have jobs and I've never been without them. They're achievers, but I think at least 2 or 3 of them will never be able to buy a home. A slight majority of all Americans polled, 54%, described their household's financial situation as good, which is about the same as it's been for the last year, but down from 63% in March of 2022. Older Americans are much more confident in their current finances than younger Americans. Just 29% of 18 to 29-year-olds described their household finances as good. About 3/4 of Americans described the nation's economy as poor, which is in line with measurements from early last year. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a new Commonwealth Fund survey, more than half of working-age adults struggled to afford health care this year. While the Commonwealth Fund, a private foundation that supports health care research, found that uninsured Americans struggled to pay for health care the most. Even those with employee-sponsored insurance are having a tough time affording health care. Of the insured, 43% of Americans with employee-sponsored health insurance struggled to afford health care this year. Meanwhile, 57% of those who purchased insurance on their own, such as on Affordable Care Act marketplaces, found it difficult to pay for health care this year. On top of that, 45% of Americans with Medicaid health insurance struggled to afford health care, as well as 51% of older Americans with Medicare. Sarah Collins, the Commonwealth Fund's Vice President for Healthcare Coverage and Tracking and lead author of the study, said, while having health insurance is always better than not having it, the survey findings challenge the assumption that health insurance in the United States buys everyone affordable access to healthcare. And the high cost of healthcare is forcing many Americans to forego medical care. According to the survey, almost 40% of working-age adults in the United States reported skipping needed medical care or prescription drugs over the last year because they couldn't afford it. And according to the survey, almost 60% of those Americans who skipped or delayed health care because of the cost said their health worsened as a result. Uninsured Americans were the most likely to put off addressing their health, with 64% reporting they skipped or delayed needed health care or a prescription drug in the last year. But 29% of working-age adults with employee-sponsored healthcare coverage admitted to skipping or delaying needed healthcare or a prescription drug this year. Out of Americans who purchased their own health insurance, 37% said they skipped or delayed healthcare, while 39% of Medicaid health insurance holders and 42% of Medicare recipients said the same. The survey also found almost a third of working-age Americans said they had medical or dental debt because of the high cost of healthcare, and 39% of people with medical or dental debt said it forced them to cut back on their basic needs like food, heat, and rent. According to Sarah Collins, Commonwealth asked Americans whether inflation and other cost of living expenses made it harder to afford their health care. She said, "We found that insurance did not appear to protect many people sufficiently from the budget squeeze." Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, has said, "Whenever I remembered the martyrdom of the children of Fatima, peace be upon her, my eyes filled with tears."
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, after 48 days of Israeli genocide, the regime was forced into an agreement and ceasefire. 39 Palestinians were freed from Israeli prison on Friday. Out of the Palestinians who had been held, 24 of them are women and 15 of them are children. Now, this reality brings to the forefront the frequency that the Israeli regime arrests children arbitrarily and many times without ever even charging them? Why does the regime target Palestinian and women and children so much?
Israel persecutes Palestinians by malign detainment practices. There are currently about 8,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails, including 3,000 detained over the past 7 weeks since the events of October 7th. Over 2,000 of the detainees are being held under administrative detention. Those legally charged are judged by Israeli military courts with a near-total conviction rate. There are hundreds of children among the detainees. At least 700 Palestinian children under 18 are prosecuted every year by Israel. Administrative detention refers to detention without charge and trial. The practice is illegal under international law. Under the prisoners' exchange deal between Israel and Hamas, several dozen Palestinian prisoners, mostly women and children, will be released. Some of the released prisoners include Mara Bekir, a 24-year-old girl who was released after 8 years in prison. She was brutally injured and detained by the Israeli police in 2015 when she was 16 years old. During her detention, she was abused and humiliated by Israeli security staff. Malak Suleiman, another 24-year-old girl, released after 8 years in prison. She was kidnapped as a 16-year-old by the Israeli police on her way back from school. Ahmed Manasra, 21 years old, was released after 8 years in prison. As a 13-year-old, he was kidnapped and detained by the Israeli forces after being overrun and injured by a car. During his detention, he was put in solitary confinement several times against the international law and suffered from serious mental health problems.
Would I like to welcome my guests to this program to take a look at that and a lot more. Out of Coventry, UK, Steve Bell, activist, Stop the War, a coalition. And out of Montreal, Canada, Yves Engler, author and political activist.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with me on the Spotlight. Let's start it off in the UK. With Steve, I want to look at, first of all, the situation with this ceasefire and the exchange of prisoners. I mean, why do you think that the Israeli regime agreed to the ceasefire and to the prisoner exchange? Because, of course, in the very beginning, they said that they would not pause at all.
I think they have agreed the ceasefire under pressure directly from the United States government. I think there's also been pressure applied internally from the relatives of the prisoners. And consequently, these forces have pushed the Israeli government to accept a position it previously rejected. Behind this, of course, lies the resilience of the Palestinians themselves, their absolute refusal to surrender to the Israeli war efforts, and secondly, the extraordinary international mobilization of people around the world in defense of the Palestinians. This has created pressure inside many governments, which is reflected upon the shifting position of the US administration, the breakup of the EU consensus on the issue. This is the big developments which have led to the concession by the Israeli government for a temporary ceasefire and prisoner exchange.
Well, Yves, how is it that the fourth most expensive military in the world, the Israeli regime, has not been able to reach its goal of stopping Hamas after over 7 weeks of bombings and even a ground invasion?
Well, clearly Hamas is better organized. We saw that, of course, with October 7th. Then the Israeli military, Israeli intelligence thought. Also, of course, the Palestinian people have shown an incredible steadfastness, resilience. I think the Israelis kind of hyped up the fact that their forces were all, keen to fight. And I think they are keen to launch missiles into Gaza, and they are keen to stay outside and, blow up, shoot people's kneecaps off like they did in 2018 and 2019 in the March and Return. I think they're a little bit less keen on getting into the streets of Gaza City and fighting hand-to-hand, where the technological advances of the Israeli military are lessened vis-a-vis Hamas fighters. And that's, of course, very brutal war. I don't no one should want to do that. And ideally, in a better world, no one would ever do that. So I think that the resistance of Hamas has clearly, there are dozens and dozens. I don't know. We don't know the exact number of Israeli soldiers that have been killed fighting in the last couple of weeks. And so that's one of the factors that's gone into forcing an about turn from Netanyahu.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve, when we look at the Palestinians who were released in exchange, we see that they are women and children. In general, why are there so many Palestinian women and children in Israeli prisons? It's as if they're targeted.
Because this, the oppression of the Palestinians is an overall oppression. It is not sort of focused on particular politics of parties or anything. It is a general oppression of the Palestinians. Consequently, they face a risen people with the whole of the Palestinian community prepared to resist on occasion by different means. And the arbitrary character of Israeli power is that it cannot tolerate any genuinely independent expression of Palestinian self-determination and expression of their rights. Consequently, they're as liable to pick up youngsters, children in the community as they are older men. They're equally liable to pick up women who are resisting the oppression of their community as strongly as any men, Palestinian men are. So the arbitrary nature of Israeli rule means that they will sweep anyone up in the from the community.
Yves, let's look at the reality of Israeli prisons, because a Palestinian kid can be imprisoned up to 20 years for throwing rocks. I mean, what does this mean?
Well, it means that Israel oversees a brutal occupation, which we all knew, but the release of prisoners has just sort of shone a light on the absolute, utter double standard hypocrisy of all those people who've been moaning on and on about hostages, Hamas's hostages. Well, we're seeing that Israel has far, far more hostages and have had them for far, far longer. And they can come up with any ostensible justification for imprisoning these 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, and 14-year-olds for extended periods. But this is absolute brutality. It's just totally horrendous. This business that we hear endlessly about Israel being this democracy, moral light, it's just complete and utter absurdness that this, you know, the releasing of children and women and the gaze into the conditions that the Palestinians are detained in often, the just complete depravity of how the Zionist occupation force operates.
Well, Steve, over the years, thousands of Palestinians have been arrested arbitrarily and not even charged and can be held indefinitely under the Israeli administrative detention law. Your thoughts about this administrative detention law and the way it is used?
It serves a very important purpose for the Israeli regime because it allows them to act on suspicion rather than on any evidence. It therefore has a function in terrorizing the general community that if you say a wrong word, if you appear to be in opposition, if your family has connections, then you can face indefinite detention, which can be constantly renewed. This is a threat which is necessary for the Israeli government because they operate on the basis of oppressing the entire Palestinian people. They have to have such brutal and arbitrary measures because that's the only way they can maintain their power. There's no element of consent in their relationship to the Palestinian community. It is only coercion.
Well, Eves, there were children who were released on Friday who had been held in Israeli prison for years and some whom have never been charged. I mean, doesn't this contradict international law? And why hasn't the regime been forced to abide by international law before now?
Because it's given diplomatic immunity, essentially, from Washington primarily, but also from countries like Canada. When there was an effort to bring Israel to the International Criminal Court, the Canadian government sent a letter calling them for it not to happen, threatening Canadian funding for the ICC. A couple months ago, that was in 2020, a couple months ago, a UN resolution for International Court of Justice to rule on the country's responsibilities vis-a-vis Israel's contravention of international law with its expansion of settlements in the West Bank. And again, Canada sent a letter to the International Court of Justice to demand they don't even rule, even though the General Assembly had called for its opinion, the court's opinion on the matter, called for not even to have an opinion, not even release an opinion on the matter. So Israel gets away with this stuff because it has the backing of obviously the most powerful country in the world, but also those, you know, the other NATO countries or the Anglosphere that basically make sure that not only that there it's not held to account in, you know, international forums, but that the world media, the Canadian, U.S., British, other, the dominant, you know, global media powers don't even really investigate these matters. And they toe the Israeli government line. So Israel's able to operate in total violation of international law on innumerable different fronts. And there's basically nothing that happens.
Do you think, Steve, that as more people have during this time come to realize the reality of the Israeli regime and basically not abiding by international law, is it likely now that we're going to see a change perhaps with the people and the movement that is taking place globally can put pressure on their governments, which can pressure the regime? How likely do you think this is to happen?
Well, I think the movement is already putting pressure upon the governments. The question, I think I take it, is how much further will this go and will it be consolidated? I think that the US government, for example, is already shifting its position. It's allowed the Israeli government considerable latitude. But judging by Biden's remarks yesterday, when he expressed some concern about the number of civilian casualties, and that he indicated perhaps there are circumstances that pressure should be applied to Israel rather than unconditional aid from the United States. This is a different shift. We see also in the British government is now talking in terms of the need for Israel to respect international law. There's been too many casualties and so on. This isn't because these governments have suddenly developed a conscience. This is because these governments have been witnessing a very substantial popular mobilization, as have many other European governments and governments throughout the world. This is a phenomenal movement, and it is having already an impact. The question is, can we keep the movement going so that the temporary ceasefire can be extended? That is what we have to see in the coming days.
Well, what about that, Eves? You're a political activist. You heard what Steve said. Can this movement be extended? Because obviously what is necessary is continued awareness about what the Israeli regime really does and its illegalities. Do you think that the activism that we've seen during the last 6 or 7 weeks can continue and actually come up or possibly create a change in the way these Western governments especially back the Israeli regime?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can. Obviously, that's in the hands of the people, and that's the hands of every individual who can make the choice to go to the demonstration, can make the choice to go to the occupation of an MP's office, can make the choice to sign the petition, that can make the choice to donate to that organization. It of course can happen. We have the resources, the human resources, the creative resources, the financial resources, et cetera, to continue it. It of course gets difficult with time. What we've seen here in Canada is clearly the biggest internationalist anti-war and, of course, pro-Palestinian mobilization that we've seen at least since 2003, maybe even since longer. And today in Ottawa, there is a march on Ottawa. So people are coming from Montreal, Toronto, Kingston, Hamilton, the cities in the region to march on Parliament Hill, Canada's capital, where Parliament is. That should be a big demonstration. It's happening right now. There's also mobilizations that have happened or happening today in other cities that are further away. And we've had just a remarkable, I mean, yesterday, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, in his meeting with the European Union officials out in Newfoundland, he was heckled by dozens of people saying he had blood on his hands. They protested at both venues where there were the meetings, and that got reported on the paper today. There's been all kinds of, bridges that have been blocked. There have been tons of different fundraisers for different political parties that have been disrupted, press conferences. It really is a remarkable people power. The railway line in Winnipeg was blockaded a couple days ago over this issue. All kinds of arms companies have been targeted. Obviously, all the stuff on university campuses. This is all people doing this voluntarily. It's very, very difficult to sustain it. It's getting very cold here. It gets harder in the wintertime. But it's possible. I mean, it's up to people. It's up to people finding an energy and saying that enough of our government, our politicians, enabling this apartheid, genocidal state's violence against Palestinians.
Well, what about that, Steve? It has been amazing to see this turnaround and this growing awareness of people globally and to see the Israeli regime losing the narrative. Do you think that we are witnessing the beginning of the end of the Israeli regime?
Well, I think that this current situation is changing the status quo in the Middle East. It's unclear exactly how things will develop, and much of it depends upon whether or not the United States government is prepared to increase the pressure upon the Israeli government in the short term. We know that the war aims of the Israeli government, which are essentially annexing Gaza, displacing the Palestinian population wherever they choose to be driven, that's the Israeli aim. That isn't an aim shared by the US government. They are quite happy to see the Israelis assault the Palestinians and hopefully, from their point of view, finish Hamas. However, Biden cannot accept the idea of a new Nakba. He knows that the US government's position will be destroyed in the Middle East for a generation if that happens, even amongst friendly regimes. So it's unclear exactly how things are going to develop, but the momentum is there in the mass mobilizations, and the Palestinians certainly aren't about giving up. So we know the situation is changing. The inside Israel itself, there'll be an accounting at a certain point over Netanyahu, because we know that there's a great fury at the way in which the Israeli government has handled matters. So there will be a change. Exactly how things develop, I think it's unclear at the moment, but the Palestinian action and the mobilization of people around the world has led to a changing situation.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Steve Bell, activist Stop the War Coalition, Coventry, UK, Eve Zinkler, author and political activist out of Montreal. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.